tips from the top floor, show number 74, November 25th, 2005.
Here's another edition of Tips from the Top Floor, bringing you the best tips and tricks for your digital photography.
日本の皆様、クリス・マークアートの、素晴らしいポッドキャストをぜひ聞いてください。Tips from the Top Floor と言います。よろしくどうぞ。
And here's your host, Chris Marquardt.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Tips from the Top Floor, number 74. I can't believe we're already that far. Oh, it just feels like yesterday when I did the first show, and yeah, it's quite a while ago actually when I started back in April. So let's see what's on today's show. It's interview time. I have Martin Bailey on the show today for a long interview about nature photography in Japan. But before we get into the interview, let me just see what's on the news. Well, not much today. Let's see. First of all, I'd like to point you to the Tips from the Top Floor buttons and banners. If you want to help spread the word about Tips from the Top Floor, and if you have a website, why not place a Tips from the Top Floor button or a banner on it? And I'll link to a location where you can download those in the show notes so you can find them. And here's me building a bit of suspense. I have an announcement to make, but not today, and probably in one of the next shows. I just want to get you all excited, and yeah, let's see what'll come out of that. The forum is doing remarkably well these days. We have over 1,111 subscribers on the forum. I think it's even more now as you listen to that. And thanks to all the listeners who are members of the forum. That's, I guess, still one of the greatest communities that I have seen so far. And now they are actually doing actual listener meetings in different areas of this world. And I have no idea what I've kicked off here, but it's fun. It's lots of fun. So thank you all for being part of that. And now let's get into the interview. Today on the show, I have Martin Bailey. He is originally from Great Britain. He has been living in Japan for about 15 years. He's a nature photographer. He is a podcaster, but we'll get to that later. Welcome, Martin.
Well, thanks very much, Chris. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks. It's really nice to speak to you finally. I've been listening to your shows for so long now.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on the show. Now, you've been living in Japan for 15 years.
Yeah.
What brought you there?
Originally, and most people don't really get this to begin with, but I was working in a factory. The trade from my hometown in England is Nottingham lace. You know, the lace that you put on underwear and tablecloths and things.
Ah, okay.
So I was making that for a few years, and I saw an advertisement in a local newspaper one morning, saying, you know, would you like to work in Japan? And that was a Monday morning. On the following Saturday, I arrived in Tokyo.
Oh my God, that was a quick decision.
Yeah.
So, Japan, the Japanese culture. Actually, I'm very interested in the culture, and unfortunately, I've never made it there yet. So, I hope that one of my future trips will actually get me to Japan, to Tokyo, or some other place there.
If you do get over, just make sure we hook up.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Fellow photographers, I'm always happy to meet those. So what's it like living in Japan from a European perspective, I'd say?
Like in your introduction, you mentioned that I've lived here for it's pretty much the most part of the last 15 years. I've spent a couple of years back in England until the end of the, 98, 99, I think, I spent in England. But Japan itself, you know, it's a great place. I must say, you know, the culture is just amazing. It's one of the most technologically advanced countries there are, but the culture, they hold on to the culture very, very well. So it's just such a great place to, an eye opener every day.
So holding on to the culture, I guess that will actually give you quite some interesting photo opportunities, doesn't it?
Well, it would do if I wasn't such a nature photographer. I have a lot of frustration because although I'm surrounded by things that are just so photogenic all the time, just general everyday life in Tokyo, I don't really make the most of it. Preferring to get off to the natural places and like the local nature research institute and things like that. And while a lot of foreign visitors to Japan are off photographing the temples and the shrines, I'm sitting in the long grass with my macro lens trying to get a photograph of a grasshopper.
So are the Japanese grasshoppers different from the ones back in England?
I was never really, although I was photographing in England from when I was in my mid-teens, I was never really that into it until just shortly before I came to Japan. I started hiking in the Peak District and the Lake District in England, and I was using a cheap 35mm. It was basically just a box for a camera. And I started to get into photography really from that point. But it was after coming to Japan and buying my first SLR that I really started to get into photography that led me to the state that I'm in today.
Yeah, but I must say I've taken a look at your website and there are quite some pictures also about the culture of Japan and of people and
things like that. One of the things that I should say, I beat myself up for not taking advantage of this enough, but I do still get out there. If I'm going somewhere for the day, I'll take my camera and I'll try and take as many photographs as I can. I've heard you say on your show as well, that once we've set ourselves up with this digital photography equipment, just taking snapping the shutter is just free. It doesn't cost anything more. So it's really just a case of using the equipment now that I have it.
So from a cultural point of view, is it different from a point that people are more used to having cameras around in Japan and are easier to have their picture taken? Is there any difference?
I think that the Japanese people are in general very inverted. Let me think. They're not that social when it comes to strangers. But the good thing of being a foreigner in Japan is that you can break down the barriers much quickly, much more quickly. So they can be quite shy. And if you walk up to someone and ask them to take your photograph, which I'm not that good at, most of my listeners will know that portraiture is not my my best subject. But the Japanese in general will be good if you walk up to them with a smile on your face and sort of introduce yourself and tell them who you are. But some will be quite... they don't really like to have the photograph taken.
Okay, so what are the real good and nice photo opportunities that you usually find in Japan?
Well, I think that the thing that sticks in my mind more than anything, the real traditional Japan, I would say there's two main things. One is that there are a lot of festivals in Japan. I mentioned that they, as a nation, they don't allow their culture to die, and many of the festivals are really amazing. They have things where they set fire to the mountains, and they'll roll logs down mountainsides and sort of get crust going down there. There's some really
that sounds
weird
interesting.
but just your general festivals that you have in the corner. Most areas of all towns have their own little shrine or temple nearby, and they have festivals a couple of times a year. So if you walk around Tokyo, you can pretty much find a festival, at least one a month or so. And so that people then as well, they're very much more open to having their photographs taken at festivals. It's something where they're doing what they're doing to be looked at. So they're much more open to having the photograph taken. But also the second thing that I said, there was two things. The other thing is something that I did just touch on. You know, the temples and the shrines themselves are just total works of art. And if you can catch those in, say, April when the cherry blossom is out, or in the autumn when the leaves are all bright red or yellow, then they can be amazing, especially Kyoto. There's a place called Kyoto, which is about three hours from Tokyo, maybe 2 hours from Tokyo on the bullet train. And if you go there at the right time of year, it can be spectacular.
Wonderful. So apart from all that beauty and art, are there any downsides to living and photographing in Japan?
For me, this is the biggest thing. It's hot. You know, the summer times can be really hot, especially in Tokyo, because there's a lot of high-rise buildings, and these are like acting as storage heaters. So the sun pounds on them all day and heats them up, and then at night it's still hot. So I find it difficult coming from England. You know, where we're not really renowned for our good weather in England. It's kind of tough, but also with the heat is the mosquitoes. You know, with me getting into the woods and the hills and things as much as possible, the mosquitoes are pretty tough to bear. And I don't know if I'm quite big. It's probably a polite way of saying that I'm quite fat, but I must have a larger amount of a larger body area, so I'm giving off more carbon dioxide or something, because the mosquitoes love me. I can go out on a weekend and I'll be bitten say 30 times in an afternoon.
Oh my god. so you must have an insect repellent with you all the time, I guess.
They don't work for me. It's crazy.
Oh, really?
I have this little battery-powered thing that shoots out insect repellent. I have the strongest stuff that you can buy. I can be smothered in it, and they're just sucking away on me. It's crazy.
Oh, my God. And you are a nature photographer, so
exactly.
That makes it even worse, I guess.
Yeah. I was actually photographing one place in Hokkaido, one of my favorite places to go. And there was me and about six other photographers with a tripod set up on a viewpoint, and we were shooting, and nobody was bothered by the mosquitoes, and around me there was a cloud of them. It was just crazy. They really do seem to like me.
Let's get into nature photography. Tell us a bit about your own photography. What you like most?
I generally, as we say, I do take a lot of different photographic genres, but my passion is nature photography. And, if you look around my gallery, people will be able to see that there's the majority of the photos are nature photography. And by that, I'm really talking about landscapes and wildlife. I guess there are two main objectives that I try to get within my own photography. One is that I like the images to depict the subject accurately. Whether it is a landscape, wildlife, I like to make it so that you can view the image and learn something from the subject, and also actually trust that that is exactly how it was as well. So I don't really mess around with my photographs too much. When I'm in Photoshop or in Digital Photo Professional, I'll maybe play with the saturation or the curves a little, to bring it back to how I recall the image being, but I don't really play around with it so much. And the second thing is that, and this is kind of contradictory to the first of my objectives, and that is that I believe it should be art, or artistic to a certain extent. And I think that as photographers, we need to have both a technical knowledge and also an artistic knowledge. I've heard someone say somewhere that we need to be both left-brained and right-brained all at once.
Oh, yes.
I think it's so important to know your kit and be able to just use it as like second nature. But then at the same time, we need to make artistic decisions, things like, what will happen if I widen the aperture here to get a more narrow depth of field? What will happen if I slow the shutter speed down and you know, make this, the bird that I'm taking, make its wings blur a little so that we can see it flying. There are artistic decisions that we need to make. And I think it's kind of contradictory to the first of my objectives, because, you know, you're not always going to get something that is true to life, because, you know, birds, normally their wings aren't blurred. But when you capture them for a 15th of a second while they're flying, they can make a beautiful shape, and it all just sort of comes together as an artistic piece of work. So they're my main objectives.
So birds are one of your main subjects, right?
They are. I tend to take a lot. Yeah, there's if you look through my gallery, there are a lot of shots of birds, but also macro work, and, you know, get a wide angle lens on there every so often and take some landscapes. I think that the last few years, the last 5 years that I've been in Tokyo, I've been a little bit stifled, because although there's a lot of parks and, like I say, the Nature Research Institute, things like that, I really want to get out into the wilderness a lot more. And I've kind of, owning a car in Japan is really, in Tokyo at least, is really not necessary. But I'm actually going to be getting a car soon, so I'll be able to get out into the countryside a lot more and take more landscape shots, which is what I really enjoy doing as well.
Okay. So, Martin, you have your own photography podcast.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. How did that come together? What got you into podcasting?
Well, I've got to say, Chris, a lot of it is your fault.
Oh, really?
You know, a few months ago, a friend of mine we'll call him Short Bloke, because that's his nickname. He emailed me a link to your podcast, to the Tips on the Top Floor podcast. And I took a listen. You know, I went home that weekend and I took a listen. And I also subscribed to Brooks Jensen's Lenswork podcast. And I started listening to these, and I was thinking that with my technical knowledge and the large number of real-world examples that I have on my own website, in my online gallery, I'm thinking that, you know, and this is definitely in no way belittling how well you do your show, but I started thinking maybe I could do that.
Oh, and, of course. I mean, yeah. That's the nice thing about podcasting. It's free and open to everyone, and a bit of competition actually helps a lot. And I like your show. Right. I really do.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Chris. So, but yeah, I mean, I started listening. I think that, you know, the humor that you bring to your shows is amazing. I just love the Halloween show.
Thank you.
You know, I was walking down. I listened to that on my way home from the office. I have like a 15-minute walk from the office, and I was listening to your Halloween show. It's dark at that time in Japan, and I was chuckling to myself, and there was all of these people that kept walking past, and they see me, this lone foreigner walking on the street, giggling to himself. And it was me sitting there in anticipation of you saying something like the ending, you know, when you were supposed to get, well, I don't know, whatever it was, you were sort of trapped in the gut, or something got you in the dark there. But
I actually don't know what happened there.
but I was like bursting out laughing, and all these people are looking at me thinking I'm going crazy.
Oh, that's fun. So for how long have you been doing your podcast now?
That was when I first listened to your show. That was in the middle of August. And I spent the next week or so, typical of me, sort of trying to get the way it looks and everything right before I even started to try to record something. What I did was I went away and I adjusted my website so that I could input the details of everything into a database so that it just creates the XML feed for me, you know, the actual feed. I wanted to do all of that automatically, so I got all of that done, and that took me about a week, and then I started to record my first episode towards the end of August. And what I did, I really have got a lot of respect for the guy who shall be named Short Bloke, who, you know, he got me into this. And I sent him my first episode, the trial episode, and he was like so cool. You know, the things he told me, you know, the audio quality wasn't good enough. I was talking about myself too much, things like this. And he gave me some real good advice on how to make it better. So I went away, fixed the content, and I bought a little digital sampler from Roland that I could plug into the USB port on my PC to make the audio quality better. And I did it again. And, you know, that really became episode one, the first episode. And that was released on September the 1st, if I remember rightly.
Wow. So, tell the listeners what is it that you talk about on your podcast? What kind of things do you have on there?
Well, I have a number of things that, you know, what I try to do is I try never to say anything that I haven't done myself or I don't have first-hand experience with. So, like, the first episode I did was, it was called the Pink Flamingo Stare, and I basically took the listeners through how I made a photograph of a flamingo in the Ueno Zoo here in Tokyo. And I went into detail about, you know, the reasons, the artistic reasons why I only closed up on the eye of the bird and I didn't sort of show you the whole flamingo. I went into details of why I used a wide aperture to get a narrow depth of field and things like that. And that's generally what I do. I pick out shots or a number of shots and I explain how I made the shot and the reasons for where I put the subject in the frame or, you know, just basically the word's composition. I'm sitting here remembering, I can recall the Japanese word for composition. And
what is it in Japanese?
It's kozu. I'm sitting there thinking of that and I couldn't remember the English word there.
And that's one of the things I like about your podcast, that you don't talk about technology, cameras, lenses and things, but you try to approach that from an artistic composition point of view and explain about the photo technique that you put behind a picture and you explain why you do it. I think that's very, very much along the lines that I try to do things, not to go into too much equipment discussions, gear discussions and things like that.
Yeah. I think it's important to try and detach it because, you know, we are all using equipment that will give us the same end result. Obviously, there's going to be different settings and I try to take that into account as much as possible. But, you know, I try not... I mean, I'm a Canon user. There are some... there are a lot of Nikon users, but I was going to say there are some guys on my site that are Nikon users, and you know, I think everybody tries to get the same results or similar results with different equipment. So it's not really necessary to ponder on that too much. I guess I should say though that the odd time I do also one of the other things I did was a review, and this obviously we're going to get into the the equipment side, but I did a review of my new Canon EOS 5D, which I picked up a month or so ago.
And which I really envy you for. That's a real beautiful camera.
It's great. You know, it's really nice to get back to the 35mm full-size thing.
The full frame, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I did one podcast that was pretty controversial about... I guess I should say it now. I've said that much. It was pretty controversial. This was about don't give away your art. It was called, and I was because I'm kind of worried about the way the photography industry is going in general. I still have a full time job. It takes up 150% of my time, like most people trying to sort of make a certain amount of money at photography. But for me, anything that I can make at my photography is a it's a bonus. It's like getting paid for doing something that I love. So what I'm trying to say is I really don't need the extra cash that I make as a semi-professional photographer. But at some point, you know, maybe the company I'm working for doesn't want me there forever. Maybe, you know, we never know what's going to happen. And at some point, I'd really love to make a living at this. But the more people out there that are, you know, as they are now, just giving away their work for free, I think that it's kind of taking, it's taking the profitability out of photography. So current professional photographers are probably finding it much more hard to sell their work now. And you know, I just think that it's damaging the industry in general to be so I don't know, free in giving out your work.
So how do you handle that? I mean, you do have a lot of your photography in your online gallery, and do you restrict these to just a certain size? Do you watermark them, or what do you do there?
I do. I only, some of the photos on my site are up to 800 pixels wide or tall, but now they're all, I think I'm resizing to 700 pixels. And yes, as you say, they're all digitally watermarked. So I use a technology called, it's from Digimark, called My Picture Mark, and it basically just puts a series of dots and things on the surface of the image, which then decodes and tells the person, say, if you try to open my photographs in Photoshop, I don't think that there's a pop-up anymore, but if you'll see that there's a copyright if you use the Digimark the plugin to actually read it. And there's also plugins for website, for web browsers. But also, the one good thing is that they also have a spider that trawls the net for these things. So if somebody copies my images and puts them onto their own site, then I can see where that's being used. So obviously, if I know about that image being used there, that's fine. But if I don't, then I can go and say, hey, you've copied my photograph. What's happening?
Oh, that's interesting. And doesn't that watermark go away when someone edits the picture?
Yes, it does become weaker. The downside of this is that if you put on a strong watermark, it can add grain to the photograph.
Okay.
The image does become a little bit grainy. It doesn't show up very much in a web browser for some reason, but in Photoshop it does look quite grainy.
Okay.
So that will probably deter the person. They're gonna, they might think, oh, this photo's really grainy, I don't want to use this. But also, if you're resizing the code as well, so it does become weaker. And I don't put one in that's so strong. I use the medium strength so that it doesn't become too grainy.
Okay, so you basically trade off a tad of image quality for being able to trace where your image goes.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, that's very interesting. Yeah, and I guess some of the listeners might want to look into that if they're really concerned about their imagery being used somewhere else. I'm usually not, because I don't sell any of my images. I don't make a lot of money on my actual photography. Just in the form of doing jobs for customers, which is different, of course. But usually the images that I take for the show and for myself, that they usually end up on the website, not watermarked. Yeah. But yeah, might take a look there.
What I do is I don't mind people reusing them for personal use. I actually also give away screensavers and wallpaper from my website. And this is all a form of marketing to get my name out there more. So I really don't mind people using them for private or personal use, for looking at it for themselves. But if that person is going to gain anything commercially, say they're going to put it on a commercial website, then I would rather that they pay for that or go and get an image from someone else that also wants paying for it and help the photography industry to become more of a lucrative area to work in.
Okay, so your website, your forum, your podcast, your gallery is at, let me get this right, at www.martinbaileyphotography.com.
That's right.
That's MARTINBAILEY photography.com, and I'll definitely put a link to that into the show notes. Any cool tips and tricks that you'd like to leave here for the listeners?
I guess I've got a few things that I would say. Firstly, shoot in RAW. If your camera has the ability to shoot RAW, then do so, because hard disk space now is getting so cheap that it's just not worth worrying too much about it. And the trade-off for using JPEGs all of the time are probably not quite going to outweigh the cost of the hard disk. Of course, if you are totally happy, you know that you're not going to want any more, or you know that you're not going to want to change the quality of the image, JPEG's fine. But the way I see it, in the future, things are going to get much easier. They're already getting easier to develop and process raw photos. So shooting raw now is probably going to benefit you in the future if it doesn't at the moment. The other thing I would say is if you're going to print your work, then shoot in Adobe RGB, the color space, as opposed to sRGB, if of course your camera allows you to shoot in Adobe RGB. And another thing would be to use your ISO. I hear a lot of people, you know, we're talking about photographs and photography, and they'll say, you know, oh, that I lost all of these chances because they were all blurred. And people have got the benefit of being able to change the ISO without changing the film now. And many people don't really use that. So I think it's a good thing to do that. Let's see, a couple of other things, I guess, would be getting closer to your subject. I know that you did a podcast about this,
right.
I think it was a month or so ago. You know, getting in close, it makes a big difference. I think it's nice to take the vista, the huge shot and the wide shot, and I do that as well, but also sort of do what the human eye does and close in on some things, you know, sort of pick out the areas that you really like and fill the frame with them, either use a telephoto or actually physically walk closer. And I guess the other thing that, you know, for me really the most important thing is, although you may not be a professional, just try and get paid for your work a little. It makes you feel a lot better when you feel that somebody thinks that your work is good enough to actually part with some cash for.
Cool. So in closing, can you do a little greeting for the listeners in Japan on Japanese?
For your show?
Yeah, sure.
That's a good one.
sorry, didn't prepare you for that.
I, it's not the Japanese. I'm trying to think of what to say. You know, most Japanese things like this, like tips from the top floor and things, what they do is they just say it in a phonetic alphabet. So it would become something like chips from the top floor. So it's kind of difficult to say, you know, something that sounds authentic. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll say. To all of the listeners in Japan, tune in to Chris's amazing podcast, Tip from the Top Floor, something like that, okay?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. 日本の皆様、クリス・マーコアートの素晴らしいポッドキャストをぜひ聞いてください。Tips from the top floor って言います。よろしく、どうぞ。
Wow.
Okay.
if you hadn't done the translation for me, I wouldn't know what you said. But I love the sound of Japanese. I really love it. It's
a nice language.
Yeah, I tried for a very short time to learn a bit about it, but I think it's hard to learn a language if you are not really in the country where it's spoken.
Definitely. That makes a big difference.
Yeah, I'd say so. Martin, thank you very much for being on the show. And I hope that a lot of my listeners will now also go to your website and listen to your show. Again, it's at martinbaileyphotography.com. And I'll put a link to that into the show notes. Martin, thanks for being here.
Thanks very much, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
And that was it for today's Tips from the Top Floor, show number 74. Thanks all for tuning in. You won't talk about this, you won't talk. Please make sure to pay Martin's website a visit and listen to his podcast. It's linked from the show notes. And if you'd like to contact me, the easiest way is through the voicemail line, where you can leave a greeting or any other feedback with regards to the show. It's 206-202-3757, that's 206-202-DSLR, and if you live outside the United States, make sure to prefix that with your international dialing code and the 1. Una, almost forgot about Thanksgiving because we don't really celebrate that here in Germany. So, a little late, here's a happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners in the States. This was Chris Marquardt podcasting from the top floor in Tübingen, southern Germany. Thanks for being subscribed. Have a great rest of the week and happy shooting. I gotta do what is right. I won't give up the fight. I stay with you every night.